So we are in Perek Yud Zayin, chapter 17. We are in this passage where Micha buys a Levi, as I like to think of it. Pesukim Zayin to Yud Gimel, sentences 7 to 13. And this particular shir is dedicated with the following gifts from our Day of Giving that we held in July. Danny and Joy Ziegelman, Alan Zuck, and Thomas and Tzipora Zubel. Also, I want to make sure to note that next week, I did put it in the email, but next week we have to be at 7 o'clock because we have our Jewish Identity Shavuot Tone programming running at 8 o'clock all week. And you actually could, you know, if you wanted to, just stay in this Zoom room because it's the same room that we're going to be using for the Shavuot Tone. So you can just, stay on here and you'll be able to participate in that as well. I think Rabbi Hecht is the one giving the Tuesday night cheer on From Satmar to Settler to Secular, What Unifies the Jewish People? It's a good question. I hope he has an answer. Okay, so we already began this. We read sentences 7 and 8. We'll do a quick recap of what we had said. We were told that there was a na'ar, a youth, or somebody not to be taken seriously, depending on how you understand the word na'ar, from Beit Lechem Yehuda, as opposed to Beit Lechem in Zvulun, Mimishpachat Yehuda, from the family of Yehuda, which was very odd, because we then said, Vahu Levi, and he's a Levi. Make up your mind. So we had different explanations. Rashi brought the possibility that his mother is from Yehuda. However, the Gemara itself rejects that, as does Radak here, saying, where do you ever see a child listed by his mother's tribe? And Chuck noted the story of the Megadeth at the end of Parashas Emor, who is an Ish Mitzri and doesn't have a Shevet to be associated with. We don't go with the Shevet with the tribe of the mother. You do have, I noted, in Malachim Aleph, Perek Zayin, you do have one case, but it's certainly not the norm. Rashi then quoted you the Gemara in Bava Basra, which suggested that he's actually just a Levi. He's associated with being from Yehuda because he's going to be modeled on Menashe, the king who led the Jews into idolatry. And we noted that's a challenging read, especially because the tribes of the north were far more into idolatry than Yehuda, granted that Menashe was into Avodah Zarah. And then you had a Barbanel who took the view that it's Beit Lechem Yehuda, which is owned by the tribe of Yehuda, and he is a Levi. In other words, he's a Na'ar, if you look at the sentence, from Beit Lechem Yehuda, which is of the tribe of Yehuda. It's an interesting read. But he personally is a Levi. I don't have a really good explanation for this. Of those three explanations, if I had to choose my favorite, I would say none. I don't understand. Nonetheless, the next words, the last words in sentence 7, are the most important, in that they say, V'hu gar sham. He was gar there. Gar means what?
Reside.
Is that what your translations have? Chuck has multiple language translations here on his third screen.
As a matter of fact, it does. He says,
okay.
And had resided.
Had resided there. What other words do you see in your translations for translating
sojourn.
Gar? Sojourn.
It could mean like a
ger,
almost like a temporary dwelling.
Right. Lagur is usually understood as not remaining there, but being there temporarily. The most famous example, of course, is the one that we note in the Haggadah, right? That they go down to Egypt, Lagur Sham. Right? Not lihishtakea, not in order to become embedded there, but rather to be there temporarily. We have all sorts of examples of the word ger, referring to somebody who is a stranger, and of course, Avraham in this week's parsha, ger v'toshav anochi imachem, ger is the opposite of being a toshav. So Radak picks up on this. If you take a look on your sheet at source number 2, number 1 was just, I brought you again that Gemara about Yehuda and Levi. But take a look at source number 2, please, where Radak speaks. He says, Va'ava pishahaya Levi, even though he was a Levi. Vahayu la'levi'im arim la'shav, it should be v'hayu. Alright. In any case, the Levi'im had cities in which to dwell. Zehanar his gorer sham bebeit lechem. This na'ar instead resided, I used resided in my translation, how do you like that? In Beit Lechem, al tzorchei michyato. because of his survival. He needed food. They were supporting him. So there were cities of Levium, but he couldn't make it there. He went to Beit Lechem for them to support him in Beit Lechem. V'hine lo matza sham od michiato. However, he had trouble making a living there. V'yatza misham lagur b'makom sheyimtza shem michiato. So he goes looking for a place where they will be able to support him. And he's getting that. Where did he build that from? From the next pasuk. If you like, take a look at sentence 8. V'yelech ha'ish mei ha'ir mi'beis lechem Yehuda lagur ba'asher yimtza. He went to find the place wherever he could find to live. V'yavo har Ephraim ad beis michala sos darko. And he went, he came to har Ephraim, which again, everything's in har Ephraim. To the house of Micha, Lasos Darko. He's looking to make his Parnassa. That's what he wants. Some suggest he's looking for a way station, but it seems like this is somebody who is seeking, support. And so that's why he left. So that's, I think, an important point. The fact that he wasn't able to make it in the city dedicated to the Levium, and we're going to come back to that in order to get a better understanding of who this guy is. But that's our starting point. Are we clear so far?
Is there in my Tanakh here where it says who gar sham? There's a hyphen between the gar and the sham. Is that in yours as well?
Yeah, that's grammatical. It's not a function of the words as linguistics. In other words, it's not a commentary on the words. It's not, and he was something called a Garsham. You'll find that in text. If you open a Chumash, like a Mikraos Dolos Chumash, you'll find also dashes between words. I once looked into it a little bit in terms of the origin many years ago. I don't remember anymore what I saw. But it's not meant as commentary on the text. So he gets a job offer. Pasuk Tes. Vayomer lo Micha me'ayin tavo. Micha says to him, where are you coming from? Vayomer alev Levi anochi. And he says, I'm a Levi. Mi beis lechem Yehuda. I'm from, as we know, Beit Lechem Yehuda. This is now the third time we found that out. Va'anochi holech lagur ba'asher emtza. And I'm looking for a place where I can hang out. Vayomer lo Micha shva imadi. So Micha says, stay with me. Vehye lila av ulechohen. And you will be for me an av, leader. And you will be a kohen, a priest. Not like he's turning him genetically, so to speak. He's not giving him a new family line. But you are going to be the Kohen in charge of my shop here. V'anochi aten lecha, and look what I'm willing to give you. Aseres kesef layamim. I'm going to give you 10 silver coins a year. Well, you saved 900 on the statue. So I guess you're set up pretty well. I'm going to give you 10 silver coins a year. V'erech begadim umichyasecha. And not only that, I am going to give you a change of clothing. And I'm also going to give you food. Vayelech ha-Levi. And the Levi went. Okay. Pause at this stage. First of all, did you notice the difference in terms of the question he was asked and the answer he gave?
No.
Sorry? Yeah.
I'm a Levi, and I'm here, and I'm from here, and I'm going to, and I'm looking for a place to live.
Mm-hmm. So he asked him, where you're from, right? When you ask somebody where you're from, what you're basically doing is making conversation.
Yeah.
And his answer is, I am a Levi from Beit Lechem Yehuda, and I'm looking for work. Right? I mean, that's essentially the conversation. So, this makes a lot of sense. Especially because Radak had said that he was supporting himself as a Levi in Beit Lechem. So what he's trying to do now is play off of the fact that he is a Levi, he's essentially presenting his resume and his objective, right? His resume, I'm a Levi. His objective, to find work being a Levi so I can live somewhere. By the way, I didn't really spell this out. How does a Levi find work as a Levi? What exactly is a Levi's job? What do Levim do if they're not in the Beis HaMikdash or the Mishkan?
A Torah teacher.
Yeah, teachers. The Levim, the tribe of Levi, taught. We talked about this back when we did Sefer Yehoshua, and we talked about the fact that the cities of the Levim are scattered among the Jewish people, and one of the ideas that we expressed then is that it's deliberate in order to make sure that there will be teachers around and available for the community. We talked about the fact that the cities of refuge, the Ari Miklat, are cities of Levim, so that the Levim could be role models. The Levi is supposed to be a model, so he's saying, I'd like to get myself a gig. If you take a look at source number 3, Rabbi David Altshuler, Mitzudat David, says it. He says, Levi Anochi, I'm a Levi. Ka'omer, Nachon Ani Lilmod Ulaharot. I am prepared to teach to learn and to teach. Kamosha Kasav B'Shevet Levi, as Moshe says about the tribe of Levi, Yoru Mishpatech Yaakov. They will teach your laws to Yaakov. So that's what he's trying to do. He wants to find himself a job that way. Yes, Chuck. Oh. I thought you unmuted. Howie.
I did unmute. Didn't he also go around trying to get Maser?
So, trying to get Maser may be a way to get some food, but you're not going to support yourself on Maser. Maybe you can, I suppose. It depends how much produce you have and what time of year it is.
I thought sometimes they'll be moved around because if they couldn't find a Balabite that wanted to give them their Maser, they...
But the problem you're going to run into is that only works at harvest time. People are not tithing all year long. Right? I mean, you have multiple harvests of different kinds. And some things, like vegetables, let's say, greens, you have a period of time when they're bringing stuff in, perhaps. But there's a good chunk of the year where you're broke. So that's going to be hard. Did you notice in Pasuk Tet, he gets two upgrades? Right? Obvious one is that he's going to be a Kohen, but he also goes from being a Na'ar to being an Av. Right? You were a Na'ar, nobody takes you seriously, and now suddenly you're a big shot. You're an Av, you're in charge, you're going to tell everybody what to do. So you know, that in and of itself is an upgrade, even beside from being a Kohen. Poof, you're a Kohen. Right, I feel like I have to make the joke, right? The guy who comes to the rabbi and says, I want to be a Kohen. Okay, we took care of it. We mentioned it now. I once had the zechus, a tremendous merit of giving a talk to a crowd and they hadn't heard it before. I actually told it to them for the first time. That was really something. That was a high point for me in my rabbinic career. Anyway.
In the second, in Pasuk, turns him into an ish.
In Pasuk Chet, it was Vayelecha Ish. Well, there, the text did. But you're right. It's funny that he's now called an ish as opposed to a nar. You're right. So he's actually gone from nar to ish in the text, and now he's going to go from that to being an av. So there was a step along the way. It's true. So the offer is 10 silver coins a year. So, apparently, this Levi is for sale cheap, right? 10 silver coins, clothing, and food. But here's a problem. Did the Levi accept the offer? What does it say?
It just said he followed.
Yeah, it said Vayelech. Well, Vayelech doesn't mean he followed, necessarily. Vayelech could mean he left. Right? You could read that in different ways. So we're going to come back to this under Malbim, but most explanations say what Gerald just said, which is Vayelech means he went along with it. It's a little bit odd, but we'll have to see. Side note, before we go on in this story, it seems a little bit odd and kind of abrupt that he just gets an offer like this. I mean, who is this guy, Micha, that he just sees a Levi and says, sure, come on in and work for me. You didn't even get to know him. You don't know if he has a good singing voice. Nothing. So you could look at it as part of the comic relief aspect of this story. Everyone is just foolish. Each person in this story does things that just make no sense. And that's one way to read it. However, someone pointed out when I did this as a women's shear that this is actually consistent with other things we've seen in Yoshua and Shoftim, in which prophets as well as Malachim appear out of nowhere. And then there are requests for them to stay. Right? Obviously, we just saw recently Shimshon's story, where this being shows up and Shimshon's father, Manoach, wants the Malach to stay. But we've seen it elsewhere as well. So it could be read like that, I suppose. Well, Micha made the offer. And let's say Vayelech means he went along with it. Take a look at Pasuk Yud Aleph. Yeah. So I think there is. I believe that there is. That's why I noted it when I said it. Hey, this is our third time of finding this, you know, this business. We haven't yet gone to the point where we're going to be able to explain what's going on, but I believe that there is something of great substance that we're supposed to be paying attention to in the fact that we mentioned three times that he's from Beit Lechem Yehuda. I don't think it's an accident. That's hard. That's hard. Because why did you start from when he's a nar? Why didn't you say Yeled? And why would you even talk about that? There was someone who was a nar and he was living in Beit Lechem and nothing happened. Then he became an Ish.
I'm looking at Gerald's point about it being an upgrade. In other words, we start the story as a nar, and then we're saying he's an Ish. Whereas the Tanakh itself is upgrading. So I'm just trying to think of why they changed that.
Right, and I'm not sure. I'm not sure, but I mean, the answer could just be, he was a nar and not taken seriously in Beit Lechem Yehuda, and now as he travels, they're going to take him more seriously. It could be like that. Yeah, Chuck.
I think, if I'm not mistaken, I was reading one of the commentaries, when he talks about when Micha refers to the lady as an av, he's not talking about him. He's giving him a compliment as you would an employee. You are now a beloved. People will listen to you.
Right.
So you would be a teacher and you learn by me. You can see the dynamics of the relationship in the next pasuk when he said that Micha treated him like one of his sons.
Right.
So I don't think it was, more than perhaps a build-up type of praise that Michal was giving to the young man.
Yeah, no, and I think he is. And the fact that in the next pasuk he's going to go back to being a na'ar again is part of what leads me in that direction. I'm not sure what to do with the temporary ish status that Tanakh has given him, which is then lost. You could explain the next pasuk, he's not an ish in contrast with Michal. You can say things, but I'm not clear on
the translation here is when it says Levi Lashevet et Ha'ish. The Levite agreed to stay with the man. And meaning that the Levite agreed to stay with Micha, then it means Vayyanar, that the Levite child was like one of the Ish.
Yeah, no, that's true. But I'm talking about the fact that you called him an Ish back in sentence 8. That's what I'm talking about. He went from being Nar to Ish, and now he's back to being Nar. There are a lot of things that you could say. You could offer all sorts of answers. I just don't. I don't have particular confidence in any of them. I could make stuff up. I could say he was a nar at first. Then he's getting on the road. He's taking responsibility for himself, and now he's an ish. But then he takes his job as a kohen. Now he's back to being a nar because he's shown himself to be a nar. Or I could say when he's on his own, he looks like an ish. But then in comparison with Micha, now he's a nar. Micha is the ish. But I don't. I mean, you can say stuff, but I don't have any confidence in it. But this story isn't done. Because look what happens. Chuck just read the words. Vayoel ha-Levi la-Sheves es ha-Ish. The Levi, as Chuck read it, agreed to stay with the man. Vayhi anar lo ke'achad mi-banav, and he's like one of his kids. This is really, really interesting. I know that I have on this at least two other Bali Kriya on this Zoom. Actually, and a third whose Bar Mitzvah Parsha this was. Wait, Howie, wasn't this your Bar Mitzvah Parsha, Shmos? Sorry? I can't hear you.
He's muted.
Yeah. I know I've heard Howie Lane Parsha Shmos.
I wasn't gonna
give you a hard time about anything from the Parsha. But look at the opening of this sentence. The opening five words of this sentence. What do they remind you of? Word for word.
Yeah.
Word for word. Yisro says, stay here. Vayoel Moshe Lasheves Es Ha'ish. It's the same thing, except that instead of it being Moshe, it's Halevi. And by the way, Moshe was a...
Levi.
And both Moshe and this guy stay in the house of somebody who is himself at some point idolatrous, quasi-idolatrous, right? Yisro was the Kohen Midyan at some point. And you have this guy Micha he's staying with who has his whatever it is, idolatry, syncretism. And by the way, he becomes part of the family. Right? Moshe marries Yisro's daughter. That also counts as becoming part of the family. The whole thing is so similar. There are so many parallels in these stories. We started to build it last time. We really start to see it here. You know that this is what's going to lead to the Gemara about the Levi being Moshe's grandson. But the parallels are only going to build from here. There's so much more going on. But let's keep on reading here. I jumped the gun a little bit. Vayimale Micha es Yad HaLevi. Micha filled the hand of the Levi. This is a term that we use when you dedicate the Leviim in the Mishkan. Lemale Yadam Lechahein. To fill their hands is when you give them the tools and anoint them and give them the role. Vayilo Hanar Lechohein. There he is again as a Nar. He becomes a Kohen. Vayi Beves Micha. And he's in the house of Micha. Vayomer Micha, Ataya Dati Kiyetiv Hashem Li, and Micha is so happy, he's over the moon. He says, now I know that God is gonna be good to me. Ki hayali halevi lechohen, cause look at that, I got a Levi as a Kohen, boy is God gonna be happy with me. Isn't that fascinating? How wrong can you be? God's gonna love it. I got a statue. I got a Levi. This is exactly what he wants. All I need now is a Kiddush club and it's all set. Like, why does he think that this makes any sense whatsoever? So again, we have our two views of Micha, right? Either Micha's a good guy who got lured into Avodah Zarah, or he is a syncretist, right? Those are your two options. Either one can fit. You can take it as he's a good guy who got drawn into idolatry, but even if it's idolatry, he still thinks, but having someone from Shevet Levi has to be a good thing. Take a look at Radak in source number 4. Siman tov huzelish, and is damainli mishevet ha-kohenim lios kohen li. It's a good sign for me that I got a Levi to be the Kohen with me. And Malbim, I said we were going to see Malbim on this whole Vayelech, Vayoel, and all that. Now we're going to see it. Malbim sees a curious progression for the Levi, because he says Vayelech, at the end of sentence 10, is that he left. And then Vayoel is that he agreed. That's the way that he reads it. And he says there's more going on here. There's more of a progression. Because first it says he agreed to stay, then it says that he was like one of his kids, and then it says, and he was in the house of Micha. So look at what Malbim does with this. Malbim loves language. He can't get enough of language. Take a look at source number 5. He says, Vayelech HaLevi, the Levi went, Siper, Shetchila la ratza la haskiras atzmo la avodas elilim v'halach mimenu. At first he said, no way, I'm not hiring myself out to avodah zarah, I've got my pride. And he walked out. V'achar kach, and then, v'yoel halevi. He agreed. Nisratza, he was persuaded, he said, okay, fine. La sheves es ha'ish, to stay with the man. Ratzalomar lolios la abu l'kohen. I'm not going to be the father, so to speak. I'm not going to be his rebbe. I'm not going to be his kohen. Rak la sheves b'beisav es ha'yam. I'm just going to stay for a while. Vahi anar kachami banav. And then he became like one of his children. Ochel al shulchano, eating off his table. V'achar kach al yedei sheyashav b'beis rasha nigra racharav. And because he stayed in the house of the rasha, he's in beis micha, he gets drawn into it. So Malbim sees this as part of the Levi's progressive decline. He was a good guy to begin with, and he fell into Avodah Zarah. That's one take, and it's going to fit very well with the Gemara when we get around to the Gemara in Bava Basra at the end of this story. But you could also support syncretism in this read, right? The idea that what's going on here is not idolatry, but rather is some weird hybrid of Canaanite idolatry and Judaism. So in that sense, it actually makes a lot of sense to say, I want to have a Levi, because I view what I'm doing as Jewish. Take a look at Ralbag in source number 6. V'hine, mashach libo shel micha el sheyiyah lo lekohen bebeiso, lish'ol ha'asidos b'emtza'us ha'pesel v'atrafim. Micha's heart was drawn, as I translated it, that he should be the Kohen in his house in order to inquire of the future with a statue in the Trafim. Remember, syncretism says this isn't an idol. It's some kind of other talisman of sorts. That's the idea. So you could fit it either way. So what we get out of this passage, sentence 7 through the end of the perek, is, number one, turning the priesthood into a source of profit, and you're not even making good money on it. Right? It's just subsistence wages. You get food, you get clothing, and 10 silver coins a year. Don't spend it all in one place. According to Malbim, it's another example of persuasion leading to corruption, as we saw with his mother and making the statue in the first place. Or, per Ralbag, it's the threat of syncretism. The Jews blending in with the society around them. You follow? Okay. Now we
The syncretism is not shituf.
So
just blending in the society.
It sort of is shituf, right? Dan points out shituf, the idea of partnering God with other gods, is prohibited in Judaism. We're not allowed to do that. Non-Jews may be permitted. That's the whole Christianity discussion. But Jews for sure are not allowed to pair God with other gods. The way Ralbag is framing it is, it's not shituf because this isn't a true idol. It's just a statue. You're not supposed to have statues. It's used for fortune telling. We're not supposed to engage in fortune telling. But it's not an idol. He's not claiming it's a god. We're just adopting things from the society around us. That's the way that Ralbag will look at it.
It's assimilation.
Oh, definitely. I would definitely look at this as assimilation. Yes, I would think so. So, here we shift gears. We're now putting the Micha on the side and putting the Levi on the side. And instead, we have to talk about the tribe of Dan. And the reason why we have to do this is because what we're about to see is that the tribe of Dan is going to come marching through the area, coming up from the southwest, which is their general plot, as we'll see, and going way up to the north to conquer land. In either the northern part of Israel or north of Israel. If you flip to source number 8 on your sheet for a second, I put it after source number 7 because of the arrangement on the page. It worked better this way. But this is a map among many maps that you can find online that try to tell you where the Shvatim had their portions. Like every map that is out there, it has some flaws and some problems. I have not been able to find a map that really matches the Psukim and Yoshua perfectly. Among the challenges of the map that you see is that the area where they have Zevulun doesn't actually run to the shoreline in the west. And Zevulun is supposed to be Lechof Yamim, right, by the sea. So there are some issues there. But there's more to talk about why Zvolun is there. There are ways to justify that. It doesn't... I got sidetracked. The point is, the map ain't perfect. Don't take this as this is where the Shvatim are. Nonetheless, it's a better map than a lot of others that I've seen, and it's in color. And that makes it easier to work with. And so that's what I used. So you see where Dun is. Dun is by the water, right? Which makes sense in terms of the positioning there, because remember we said Shimshon was in the area bordering the Plishtim between Yehuda and Dun, going back and forth between Yehuda and Dun. So that's exactly where he is. He's right by Aza. So that's where Dun is supposed to be. But Dun comes marching up through the area, through Har Ephraim, on their way up to an area which, we'll see, is either north of Naphtali or north of Menashe. You follow? That's where they are going. Which raises all sorts of questions. Were you supposed to take land there? Was that part of the plan? If so, why weren't you there before? And if not, then why are you going there? What was this all about? So we have three different sets of psukim that relate to Dun's territory. The first one that you find, go back now to source number 7, is from Parashas Vayechi. This one may not relate to Dun's land, but some of Yaakov's brachos, of which this is one, relate to the land that his children are going to get. So Yaakov says that Zvulun will be by the shore. He talks about Yisachar being between the boundaries. He talks about Asher and the land that Asher gets. So it's possible there's a connection here that it says, Dan Yadin Amo Kechad Shiftei Yisrael, he will judge his nation like a leader among the tribes of Israel, which is taken as a reference to Shimshon. Yehi Dan Nachash Alei Derech, he is a snake along the road. Shififon Alei Orach, again a form of serpent on the path. He bites the heels of the horses and the rider falls backwards. So the idea of it being a serpentine portion, perhaps, could fit the idea that he starts out southwest and then works his way up to the north. Maybe. The more substantive one, though, is the next pasuk that I brought you in source number 7, which is from Moshe's bracha to Dun. Uladun amar Dun gur aryeh, Dun is a young lion, yizanek min habashan. Yizanek. Anybody know what the word yizanek means? Zinuk?
Yeah, it's like to an animal that jumps.
Right. It's to spurt out from something. It is like a stream of water that comes from something. Is yizanek. So Ibn Ezra says actually what David just said. Ibn Ezra suggests that yizanek is an illustration of the lion. Yeah, bursting forth. But Rashi says no. It's a reference to Dun's portion up north. That's what's going on here. Or at least that's the way that Rashi reads it. He says, first of all, take a look at source number 9. He quotes you the Sifri about Dun being a lion. He says, Dun gur aryeh, milamed, Shesamuch lasfar. This teaches that he is right by the border. V'chomisha samuch lasfar nimshala arayot. Anybody who's near the border is compared to a lion. He has to be fierce in order to defend. He's not a snake now. He's a lion. Now, that you could argue is the western area because he's near the Plishtim, but we usually assume not because the Plishtim were considered to be in our land, not adjacent to our land. There are distinctions, lands of Canaan, the land of the Plishtim, but we usually treat the Plishtim as being on our land. It's much more likely that this Sifri is talking about the eastern boundary, northeastern boundary, and the land that Dun will take up north. And that's what Rashi brings you with the rest of this Sifri. Yezanek min habashan, spurting forth from the Bashan. Mazinuk ze yotzei mimakom echad v'nechlak l'shnei mekomos. It comes out of one place and sprays out to multiple. Kach shivto shel Dan notel lo chelak b'shnei mekomot. So too, Dan had portions in two different areas. So Yezanek min HaBashan is a reference to Dan having a portion up north in the Bashan. That's one way to read it. Another is a Gemara in Bechoros, in source number 10, describing the Yarden River. So first we get a nice description of the path of the Yarden, starting out from the Banyas, running down through the Sea of Sibchi, through Yam Tiberia, down to the Dead Sea. But the next line, the last line, is the one I wanted. Amr b'chia bar Abba, Amr b'yochanan, lama nikra shemo Yarden? Why do we call it Yarden? Sheyored midan. It descends from Dan. So Yizanek could be understood as a reference to Dan, meaning Dan is breaking forth, bursting forth to take two different areas, or Yizanek is a reference to the Yarden, so named because it's Yored min Dan, descends from Dan. It's an interesting play on words. I don't know how much etymological stature it has, but it's a nice drash on the name Yarden. Howie, you were going to say? No? Okay. So what you have in Moshe's bracha is a statement that is associated with Dan having this land up north, either because they spurt forth to take two areas, or because the Yarden is Yizanek min HaBashan, coming from their land in Bashan. Take a look now at source number 11, please. This is from Yoshua Perek Yud Tet, the end of the division of the land among the Shvatim. The last set of tribes to receive their portions were Machane Dan. Remember that the Jews traveled in Machanot when they were in the wilderness. Each Machane had three tribes. So the last one is Machane Dan. And they're the last three tribes to actually get their portions, and Dan is last of all. Remember that the Torah says they traveled last. They were the Ma'aseif L'chola Machanot to gather everybody as they traveled. So Dan is described here in chapter 19 in Yehoshua getting this portion, source number 11. Vayetze gevul b'nei Dan mehem. The boundary of Dan left from them, went out from them. Vayalu v'nei Dan vayilachamu im Leshem. So they went up and they fought with Leshem. Vayilkidu osad, they conquered it. Vayaku osad lefi charev, they took it by the sword. Vayirshu osad, they conquered it. Vayeshuva, they settled there. Vayikru leleshem Dan kishem Dan avihem. And they renamed Leshem Dan, because hey, we're Dan. That's why they named it then. Of course, we know, of course, that in Avraham's day, we call it Dan because of what was going to happen in the future, right? Vayodof ad Dan, in the war with the four kings and the five kings, Avraham chases the enemy all the way up to Dan. Okay. So, there we find out a brief description of the story we're seeing here. In other words, it's told in Yehoshua, but it doesn't happen until Sefer Shoftim, either the beginning of the book or the end of the book, depending on who you believe. Are we clear so far? I'm not losing anybody, but going through the different psukim and the map, we're good? So far we understand? Okay. So this place, Leshem, that Dan takes, is an interesting place. It's located in Bashan, as per Moshe's bracha, at the top of the Yarden, as we've already noted. That's a really interesting thing. Which tribes had portions east of the Yarden?
Reuven, Gad, and Hatzi Menashe.
Right. Do you see a pattern there? Reuven, Gad, Menashe, and Dan. What is the common denominator? It's not a gematria. Common denominator between Reuven, Dan, Gad, and Manasseh.
The oldest?
Yeah. They're all firstborns. Reuven is the firstborn of Leah. Dan is the firstborn of Bilhah. Manasseh, firstborn of Yosef, who was the firstborn of Rachel, and Gad is the firstborn of Zilpah. So by Dan getting land up in Bashan, which is east of the Yarden, you now have representatives from each of the Imahot, firstborn, in fact, from each of them, getting a portion east of the Yarden, which wasn't initially part of Eretz Yisrael. So that's a really interesting thing. Ralbag actually believes it's west of the Yarden, but it's hard to sustain if you're telling me it's in Bashan. Bashan is east of the Yarden. Okay. So, Dan goes up north to take this land. What's the motivation in doing it? Take the sentence we read in Yoshua in source number 11, and take the opening sentence of chapter 18 in Shoftim, where it says, "Bayamim ha'hem, in those days, ein melech b'Yisrael, we got no king." That's our second time that we're mentioning that, in case you had forgotten the first. And in those days, the tribe of Dan was seeking a portion in which to dwell. Because they had not gotten a portion among the tribes of Israel and until that day. So, what's the motivation for Dan?
Territory.
They did have territory, though. They had the area down in the west. Sorry?
Additional settlement. The plot of land was insufficient for their population.
Good. So Radak takes that view. Radak agrees with Gerald. They don't have enough land. The truth of the matter is, if you were to look back in Bamidbar chapter 26, the census that's taken before they cross the Jordan, year 40, they're the second biggest tribe. Only Yehuda is bigger than Dan, and Yehuda gets a much larger portion. Granted, Yehuda is the Negev, which is a little harder to live in, but Dan has an inadequate territory. Abarbanel brings this idea. Also, Rashi brings this idea as well. Take a look at source number 12 at Radak's framing. Kilo nafalalo. The text said, kilo nafalalo. It had not fallen to him, meaning, lo nafalalo kol nachalas gorolo. It's not just that the portion is small, but they didn't even take the entire portion. Kamosha Omer b'sefer Yoshua, like the pasuk in Yoshua said, v'yatzah gavul b'nei Dan mehem, their border left from them. Kolomar, pachos mimasha yaro'u lehem. They had less than they needed. That's one take. They didn't settle all of it, part of it. Malbim is strong on the idea that really they just couldn't conquer part of their land, and that's why they left. If you take a look at source number 13, this is Malbim and Yehoshua. Shalo nachalu es gibulam. They didn't take their portion. Ki ha'emori lo nesano laredes la'emek. Because the Emori wouldn't allow Dan to go down into the valley. V'zeh be'er b'shoftim yirches, as explained in our pasuk. Ki lo naflalo arayomahu. It had not fallen to him. Kavanaso, meaning shenachalaso lo nafla b'soch hashvatim. Rak b'ktzei ma'arav al hasfar. If you take a look at the end of the sentence, at the end of the sentence in Shoftim, it said ki lo nafalalo ad hayom hahu b'soch shivtei Yisrael benachala. It had not fallen to him until that day among the tribes of Israel as a portion. It had not fallen to him until that day. Right? Among the tribes of Israel. So Malbim, again, ear for language, says, I understand it had not fallen to him. That means they didn't get their portion. What does it mean it had not fallen to him among the tribes of Israel? What's that about, among the tribes of Israel? So Malbim explains, because they can't get the eastern part of their portion. Take a look at the map again. There, by the shore, and there's this area that juts out east. He says that's what they're not able to take. And that would have been among the tribes, among Ephraim, Binyamin, Yehuda. And that's what they're not able to get. And that's why they want another area. So says Malbim. And then Abarbanel has a different idea. Abarbanel says, and I'm mentioning it even though I'm going to disagree with it, but Abarbanel says their portion was actually far from everybody else's. He says that's the meaning of not being besoch shivtei Yisrael. I brought it for you at number 14. You can read through it. He says their portion was really away from everybody else. I don't really understand his statement. Yehuda's on their eastern border. Ephraim and Binyamin are right there. Menashe is above them. I'm not really clear about this. And I'm especially not clear about this because if your problem is that the Shvatim are not near to you, why did you go way, way up northeast, away from everybody else, to get your land? You went the wrong way. The only thing I could think of to make Abarbanel work is if Dan is missing their machane. They liked being with Asher and Naphtali, who were the other two members of their camp in the Midbar, in the wilderness, and they want to go up north in order to be near them, which you can see on the map. Asher and Naphtali are way up north, so maybe they want to be near them. But usually, most people look at the first two answers that we gave. Either they don't have enough land, or they couldn't conquer part of their land, and that's why they decide that they're supposed to go up to Leshem. Clear? Okay, but we're not done. We got more. Were they supposed to settle in Leshem? There's no wrong answer to this. Were they supposed to settle in Leshem? You could say yes, you could say no. You're right both ways.
No.
Okay. So Radak says yes, and he says no. In source number 15, Radak first says Leshem was their portion. They just didn't get it before, and they're going to get it now. Or maybe not. Maybe Leshem was not part of Israel at all. Which would explain why we didn't talk about Dan being one of the tribes assigned east of the Yarden. They weren't supposed to go there. It was actually not supposed to be their land. But let's try to get to the point in all of this, because I'm not just saying all of this in order to provide information about Dan, although that's Torah too. But I think there's a point here. How are we supposed to read what Dan is doing in this story? Is Dan doing anything wrong? You could read it in a very powerful way. They need more land. Leshem is supposed to be theirs if you take that view. And they took their land. But you could also read it in a more troubling way. Their motivation here is they didn't make the effort to settle their own portion. They want something. They're greedy. They're hungry. And so they went outside of Israel in order to get a stake. They didn't conquer their portion. Instead, they went outside of Israel, according to that read in Radak, in order to get, in which case, they're a lot like this Levi. Right? You're hungry for something. You left where you were supposed to be, and you ended up at Pesel Micha. Howie. Oh, I'm getting there. I'm getting there, but you grabbed it first. That's fine. But if you want, you can look at source number 17, because he's with you. But the point that I'm trying to make, what I want to build up to here, is that the Levi left Beit Lechem Yehuda, where he could not get support. He wants something, and he ends up with Avodah Zarah. The tribe of Dan left their portion, which they weren't able to conquer, and they went elsewhere trying to get, and they ended up leaving Israel. And going, as we'll see, descending along the way. It's not a pretty picture. So that's where you get the reiteration that Howie pointed out in the beginning of chapter 18, when it says, hey, ein melech b'Yisrael, there is no king. Malbim says, it's not even about the conquest. He says it's about their Avodah Zarah that they get into with the Levi, because you'll see, they get involved with this whole story. But he says, the point is, Gama sipur sheyavo po hayasi baso mitzad shein melech otzer ba'am. You don't have a king who's going to lead the nation. That's what makes this happen. Shem hayalem melech lo hayashtevet miyisrael avdim avodah zarah. If you had a king, you wouldn't have had them worship idols, and you'll see where that's going to happen in the rest of this perek. Malbim is not saying that it's the problem of the invasion. However, Abarbanel does say that. Where did I put Abarbanel? I put Abarbanel on the next page, in number 19. I flipped things. Take a look at Abarbanel. He says, "V'haya ra'uy shebnei dan yichbishu es eretz nachal asam." They're supposed to take their portion. Avolo yatzu migvul hanachla lakacha lo yatzu migvul hanachla lakachas eretz shelo lahem. They're not supposed to go take other land. This isn't theirs, according to Abarbanel. Aval asu zelafisha bayamim ahem lo haya melech v'shofet al Yisrael. There was no king. There wasn't even a shofet. Shiim chebi adam to stop them. V'lo haysalei amorah shamachas. They're not afraid of anybody. So what they did was, they decided we're going to go conquer land instead of taking what we're supposed to take. That's a sign of their deterioration. And then last, Mitzudat David, which I brought you in number 18, says there's another aspect to not having a king. They have to fight for this land alone. That wasn't the way it was supposed to work. The tribes were supposed to be working together. The fact that they're alone is Ein Melech B'Yisrael. But specifically, this idea that there's a deterioration here, and that there is greed involved, highlighted by what Abarbanel noted here. That specifically is the problem, and it parallels the arc of the Levi. What the Levi does himself, Dan does as a tribe. And so what we're going to see is them coming through first in a reconnaissance mission, and then ultimately to fight a war, not much of a war, you'll see, to conquer an area called Laish / Leshem, for their expansion. Okay? Clear? Good.
So we know that Dun didn't split up half of Dun in the west and half in the east.
So it's not clear. I mean, I have to think they left some people in the area to the, in the southwest. I don't think they all moved north. But we'll see as it plays out. We'll see as it plays out whether you can prove that from the text. Okay, then thank you very much, and God willing, next week at 7 p.m.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good night.
Have a good night.